Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hello. This is Anne Ravel Petcher. I am your host of Wireless Connections, our special show that we do every other week with the Wireless Research Center of North Carolina. I want to introduce our co-host today, Larry Stefan.
Hello, Larry.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good. He doesn't like it when I pronounce his name that way. And Dr. Jerry Hayes. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, Anne.
And we have a new producer today. Say hello to Reed Powell. Hello, Reed.
Hey, hello. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon. We have a really fun show today. We have some two CEOs of companies that are really impacting the wireless device world in a big way. First, we have Chris Lamb with Device Solutions, who's a CTO and co-founder of Device Solutions. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Anne. Thanks for hosting us.
I'm so glad that you're here. And we also have James Brannigan, who's with Bright Wolf. Hey.
Hi, Anne. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here, too. Hey, so let's start, James, talking a little bit about Bright Wolf. You're in sort of the Internet of Things world. Is that right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about what Bright Wolf does.
Sure. We're a software company, and what we do is help our customers build end-to-end connected solutions. And there's a lot of pieces to putting one of those together, and we help along that entire process.
What's that mean, end-to-end connected solutions? What kind of companies need an end-to-end connected solution?
It starts out, you know, with companies that maybe want to control a device in a field, like a generator or something that's remote, like a refrigerated tractor trailer.
Okay.
But it's been expanding and is predicted to expand greatly over the next decade to billions and billions of connected devices, things in your home that will control the lights, healthcare devices that maybe track little bits of information about you, specifically like your pulse or your blood glucose levels, things like that. So there's many, many devices that are predicted to come online and be connected to the internet over the next decade.
So you have a huge potential audience.
The potential market is gigantic, yes.
That's pretty nice.
It's a good place to be in, that's for sure.
Now, you're a pretty new company, is that true?
We were founded in 2008.
Oh, okay.
With my co-founder, Patrick Dempsey. And we've been building our platform since then and really have started to get a lot of momentum lately where we're getting more and more customers and volume coming onto our platform.
So you talk about a platform. Tell me about that.
Well, a key part of the Internet of Things or machine-to-machine systems, as they were kind of called a little bit ago, is getting all this data to the Internet and storing it and then integrating it to lots of different systems, mobile applications, web UIs, enterprise backends, reporting engines, and other organizations that might be interested in the data. And so what we do is help capture that data from these devices in the field and store it up in the cloud, and then help with the integrations out to all the different people that want to consume that data.
Wow. Okay, let's take a step back. They used to be called machine-to-machine?
It's had a lot of buzzwords over the years. It's been called sensor fusion, sensor integration, connected systems, machine-to-machine. Internet of Things is just the latest buzzword.
But it's a little more consumer palatable, I think, than machine-to-machine. That's kind of spooky.
They keep improving the marketing, that's for sure.
That's really interesting. So tell me how you came to be connected with the Wireless Research Center.
Sure. So we found out about Larry through one of his former colleagues, John Austin, who runs a accelerator-like program in Durham called Groundwork Labs.
Yeah.
And Groundwork Labs is funded by a grant from NCIDEA, which is a nonprofit that operates in the state with kind of a mission of economic development of high growth potential companies. And Patrick and I both had applied and been accepted into the Groundwork Labs program as we were trying to figure out how to make our sales and marketing more scalable.
Gotcha.
And so they help small companies meet the specific challenges at Groundwork Labs that they're dealing with. And so our specific challenge was how do we scale the sales and marketing so we can really, you know, grow our business.
Interesting. And so you met Larry there.
Correct.
What intrigued you, Larry, about what Bright Wolf was doing?
Well, we understood here at the Wireless Center. In fact, if you think about the Wireless Center, the vision that Jerry had a few years ago when he conceived this was really about facilitating the Internet of Things. So at the core of any device is collecting data, right? So the service proposition of service value that our a lot of our partners here, like Device Solutions, was bringing was designing platforms. But the platform was being designed for only one reason, to collect data. Uh-huh. So the marriage seemed an applicable marriage between Device Solutions and Brightwolf, that their end user, their customers were one of the same. The Device Solutions customer was the same customer as Brightwolf. Mm-hmm. And that if we could bring this as a complete turnkey type of solution, not we, but they, I guess is a better way of saying it, we could probably deliver more value to the collective customers. By definition, Device Solutions customers are our customers because, you know, we're trying to make product go into the marketplace. We're trying to make product successful in the marketplace. And again, we being a collective way, and that's the whole essence of the Wireless Center that basically we envisioned, or Jerry envisioned a few years ago, to say, how do we make this into a ecosystem that actually generates value to the marketplace and builds upon itself. And it was a natural fit between the two organizations, Device Solutions and Brightwolf, to bring that full value proposition to the market. Sure, you want to add something?
Actually, it's a pretty big community. It's kind of like the internet of everything.
Yep, right. I think that's actually what the CED conference is called this fall, is the internet of everything. That's pretty funny. Well, tell me a little bit more, James, about Brightwolf. How do you, you've taken us up down this road of it used to be machine to machine and now it's Internet of Things, but is there a difference between the two?
The way I try to explain it to people is this way. At a technical level, there's a lot of overlap in the different software components to build the two systems. But the way I explain it to folks is about the actual consumers of the data.
Okay.
So a machine to machine system is more focused on the command and control of the asset in the field.
Okay.
It's maybe belongs to one specific organization that owns the asset, and all the use cases and ROI are built up around
their
usage.
Sort of like you talked about with refrigerated trucks, right?
Exactly.
So that's a pretty good example of more of a machine-to-machine than an Internet of Things kind of thing.
At the way they're deployed today, that's absolutely true. So where I think Internet of Things really starts to come in is when you get all this data, there's a lot of constituencies out there, other companies that care about the information, but can never operate the actual system because they don't own the asset.
Right.
They don't necessarily have a way to pay for that, but they care about the data quite a lot. And so then you get these business relationships that will develop up at the internet level. And this will be where people say, I'm an insurance company. I can give this trucker a better deal if they share the information from their tractor trailer because I can validate that they're driving safely and that they're operating the refrigeration unit within its normal parameters, so they're less risk, so I can give them a better rate.
Okay, let me make sure I understand this correctly. Are you saying that more the machine-to-machine is more likely to be a closed environment, and Internet of Things, you're going to be able to open it up to more people to have access to?
I think a better way to characterize how I think it's happening is machine-to-machine is about the system that actually controls and interacts with the devices. Internet of Things is about tagging and annotating all that data that is collected so it can be shared and monetized by lots of different organizations.
Okay.
Like a machine to machine is like the infrastructure or the highway, and the content is like the what's on the road.
Okay.
Exactly. Oh,
now I'm getting it. Now I'm getting it. See, that's why you have PhDs in the room. So so tell me who else plays in this space and how. You talked about trucking. You talked about insurance companies. Give us some more examples of the kinds of customers that you would work with.
Sure. So we see there's usually three distinct entities in a solution. There's a hardware provider, much like Chris's company at Device Solutions.
Okay.
Someone needs to be providing the software that runs the system end to end.
Okay.
And then there's someone that is a brand or in a specific niche market, like refrigerated trucks or generator monitoring or waste management. There's many different markets where this technology can be applied. And there's, within each market, many different constituencies. So in refrigerated trucks, another constituency is the regulatory body.
Okay.
That want to track safety of the drivers and also track the safety of the loads. So the USDA cares quite a lot to make sure that no one's tampering with the contents of a load of ground beef. Because they don't want, a food safety issue to develop because of that.
Right. Okay.
Insurance companies are a big one. But anywhere there is a company that needs to make a connected system, they fulfill that role of the brand.
You're getting the more you talk, the more questions I have. So I guess that's why you're on the radio, is to get people those answers. When you're starting to talk about all these things and all these players and all the different pieces of information they want, where does all that data live, and how do you make sense of all that data?
So that's a very detailed question, but I'll start with the first part. Where does it live? We really see two topologies rolling out. We see one topology, which is existing large enterprise companies that have their own IT staff, and they typically want to keep that data in-house. So they want to run it on their servers in their existing enterprise environment. And then we see a lot of new startup companies and maybe companies that don't have quite as sophisticated an IT shop, and they want to host it up at the cloud. And that's one of the services that we optionally provide to our customers is we will act as their kind of outsourced operations for managing all this data in the cloud for them.
Okay.
So they don't have to do it with, you know, hire a bunch of new IT staff in-house to manage this.
Is that one of the bigger hurdles to actually making sense of that data, is managing the data itself?
Certainly putting a robust system in place to capture the data, make it searchable is one of the hurdles. But another one is just the annotation process and figuring out what actually makes sense. Because in many cases, you're replacing a pen and paper process. Things just were collected and manually collated, and now they have to rethink, how do they even do business? They can get information in real time, and how does that change how they actually run their whole organization? And that takes time to get used to the fact that I have this data in real time. Wow, I could cut out these two people and change this whole process, and we're actually more reliable and more cost-effective.
James, do you see a lot of your customers coming from companies trying to do it in-house, and they realize that the scale of trying to do it in-house is more than they have in terms of talent or knowledge, and they come to you and say, we've gotten this far, but we're afraid that from a full value proposition back to our customers or the data we're trying to collect, it becomes more of a challenge than they're able to meet?
Certainly some of the easiest sales we have are folks that have tried it and hit a lot of the problems, as opposed to the folks who haven't put one together yet. So that's definitely the case.
So those who have not done it at all and think it's a relatively simple task, do we often see them going out on their own and coming back to you later on?
We're happy to help them get up if they trip. Yeah. One of the common misconceptions that folks have with these systems is that it's just another website. And what they don't realize is you have a gigantic volume and velocity of data coming from these devices. It's not just people reading a website over and over again and they're getting the same copy of the data, which is what most of the traditional internet is. This is actually very write-heavy and very update-heavy systems. And, you know, we've seen customers where the volume rivals that of Twitter or Facebook.
Wow.
In terms of write volume. And so people don't realize that when they're thinking, oh, this is just another website. And so they embark on a project to build that, and all of a sudden it falls over.
What do you mean by write volume?
So in software architecture, one of the key things you look at is what's your ratio of reading data to writing data.
Okay.
And in a traditional website, you only update that page less than 1% of the overall time. Most of the time, people are reading that information from the website through their web browsers.
Okay.
In a system like this, those devices are constantly chattering. They're telling you the temperature of each zone. They're telling you if they have any diagnostics. They're telling you their battery level. Lots of different things are coming in all the time. And so dealing with that, catching it, annotating it, making it available for people to run reports over and query and send to other systems, that's a very different IT system than people are used to making.
Do you guys do the analytics of the data, or do your customers do that?
We are capable of implementing any specific analytics they ask for, but we also, if they have a partner, an existing analytics suite like a Cognos or a SAS, we're happy to integrate with that and let them run their analytics on that program that their staff is already familiar with.
Wouldn't it be true that one of the definitions of the Internet of Things is real-time data? And real-time data, again, is the clear definition of what the Internet of Things is all about. If you, regardless of whether you're getting the pulse information off your arm or the tracking data of a truck, it's always in a real-time mode. Mm-hmm. And for build an architecture to actually support real-time data is significantly more complex than anything we've seen before. But the benefit of real-time data is really the core benefit of Internet of Things type of devices, that, you know, you are now connected on a real-time, on an ongoing basis, and everything is as current as you want it to be. So there is a price to a lot of that real-time information, and depending upon how much data you need and how much data you want, you can package it and redeliver that. But a lot of that comes back to maybe what Chris can address is some of the different radios that have to be put in place and how large the packets have to be and mm-hmm. the different core structure to actually deliver all that data in a real-time mode. So,
Great. Well, let's just have a real sense of sort of in a close. If somebody's thinking, I can probably utilize the services that you offer at Bright Wolf, what would they do? How would they figure out if they're a good customer for you?
The best thing to do is just start a conversation with us, send us an email.
What kinds of questions are in their head right now, do you think?
Usually they're thinking things like, my competitors are putting together a connected offering and people are starting to buy my competitor's product instead of mine because of the software capabilities. And right. I've never thought about software being the buying differentiator, and it's becoming the buying differentiator. I have to catch up.
Excellent. Very cool.
The more forward-looking folks that aren't feeling a competitive pressure are saying, I've got all these pen and paper processes. I could replace them. I could put something automated in place. I can get a cost advantage. I can get higher margins. I can run my business more effectively and maybe even increase my market share
right.
by outcompeting my competitors in the market.
Yeah,
so it's cool. It's usually someone that's very business focused about how can I either catch up or get ahead by leveraging this coming change.
Very cool. Okay, so when they're asking that question of themselves, how do they reach you?
Well, they can always send us an email at support@bright-wolf.com, and we'd be happy to get back to them next business day.
Super. Excellent. All right. Now, we keep talking about this device solutions thing. What are device solutions?
Device Solutions is an engineering consulting company that I co-founded about 10 years ago. And we provide one end of the end-to-end solution that James was talking about. So we provide the device side. We're very focused on embedded hardware and software development. And part of that is also getting these devices through the multiple regulatory and certification hurdles. So we have many customers who come to us with an idea that we help them implement, and many of these ideas involve various radios, often cellular radios. Hopefully they come to us early, because we have several customers who learn after they've developed their product and they think they're nearly done that there's major burdens to get that product into market to make it acceptable to sell it with AT&T and Verizon.
Huh.
And if they start early and plan for it, it's not too bad. But if you've already done an extra spin of your hardware and you're 6 months behind, like many people are, and then you find out you have $35,000, $40,000 of testing to do and you're not really prepared for it, it can be really painful. So
it's test early, test often.
Test early, test often. And if you don't test early and test often, we'll be glad to help you too. Sometimes we can fix it in software, but often it's a substantial redesign or relayout kind of
Is this
project.
Because of regulatory concerns usually, or...?
Well, for the carriers own the spectrum that they use for the cellular. So they have requirements well above and beyond the FCC requirements for those frequencies.
I see. Okay. So tell us about what kinds of companies you work with.
Well, we work with everybody. We have a lot of people who come to us and it's a guy, and sometimes all he's got is the back of an envelope. And he says, hey, I've invented a better light bulb, or maybe a better light bulb dimmer. And we
remote
work
and wireless, of
exactly.
course.
Exactly. Often, very often remote and wireless. But often that remote and wireless dimmer is coming from quite a large lighting company, maybe somebody new in the space. We work with them to help tune up their radios, get them through the regulatory process, work through some FCC issues with the lab. And Jerry and I, we had one debate recently where we had to take that all the way back to the FCC to get a ruling on what was allowed and a rule interpretation. So often people with light bulbs. Another example, though, is GE was doing an electric meter. So we did a component of the software to interface to the cellular module.
You know, there are a lot of people listening to this that still are not relating to antennas in their refrigerators or antennas in their lighting systems at home. How prevalent is this, that there's an antenna in your lighting system or in your...
In commercial systems, it's becoming quite common for the radios to be everywhere, maybe in the individual light fixtures and individual switches. So, for example, if you're rewiring, and this is especially popular in Europe, an older historic building, if you need to put in new lights, new offices, you don't really have the option of running all new wiring. So if you can simplify that, run power to the lights and make it the switches all remote, and standalone, maybe not even battery powered, but they can generate the power from the switch action itself, then you don't have to rewire the whole building nearly as extensively. But a new flexible building space is often built this way too.
What other kinds of things would people be surprised that have an antenna in them that they don't think about?
We've done athlete trackers, we've done container trackers. We have a secure container tracker we did for a customer.
Oh, that's right. We just did a 5K, and I remember everybody had a remote device inside their number.
Yeah, all of your RFID tags in the stores.
Yeah, the printed numbers have RFID tags, so they can clock you across the waypoints and the finish line, things like that. But we did a device a number of years ago that had cellular GPS and another radio to talk to your bike computer or to your heart rate monitor, so they could log that data in real time, and make it more friendly for spectators and for training.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, the customer has no idea generally about a radio or an antenna being part of the device.
Right. Well, I think that, and you guys can address this, but the concept of an antenna has really changed. It's kind of not that thing that sticks out of your phone anymore.
Hopefully not.
That helps keep Jerry a lot busier this way.
It keeps Jerry busier to have them not seen.
Smaller.
Integrating that antenna, making it smaller and hiding it from the customer. Look at your cell phone. You don't see an antenna sticking out anymore.
Exactly.
But your cell phone probably has 5 antennas in it right now.
Why would it have 5?
Cellular, multiple bands, maybe multiple antennas, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth may or may not share that antenna. It may have NFC in it.
And GPS.
GPS, so.
And they're all different antennas.
They're all different antennas.
All different radios, too. Maybe, maybe Chris, you want to talk a little bit about the different type of radios that you work with and you see coming through the front door of your building?
Sure. They're really a proliferation of radios these days. Cellular is the obvious one, and implementing a cellular radio in a product like an M2M or Internet of Things device is relatively straightforward from the basic hardware implementation. Getting that antenna to work and work well enough to meet the carrier requirements is a pretty good challenge. And those give you basically very long-range radio capabilities. They work almost everywhere, and they work kilometers, miles away from cell sites, so they give you a pretty good range. The only radio we typically see with a longer range is we would do Iridium and other satellite modems from time to time. Again, the actual basic implementation isn't too hard, but they have really strict antenna requirements on the antenna pattern, the effective output power, so it's another...
And why are they so strict?
Because the system is so constrained. There are only a few satellites there. Okay. You don't want to interfere with other operators. You don't want to have a lot of data that doesn't make it or almost makes it and ends up tying up the bandwidth both with the failed transmission and then several retries. So they are very strict to try to make sure that whole system, again, end-to-end, works very well. So those are your very long-range radios, but we're working with other radios that are down to just within your body. So at NC State, there's a NSF grant with the ASSIST program where they're looking at sensors on your body that are powered by either heat from your body, solar power, or maybe motion of your joints, these kinds of things. And those radios, 3 or 4 feet, maybe 10 feet is about the maximum range you want. Because
it's kind of like an iBeacon thing?
Kind of like that, but this is targeted in combination of a little bit of physiological monitoring and environmental monitoring to predict things like an asthma attack by monitoring ozone and wheezing and be able to act maybe even before the person notices that there's a problem coming on.
Interesting.
So all kinds of ranges.
How do you interact with your clients? How do you find your clients and how do you actually begin a process of working with them?
So we find our clients generally through our network with the Wireless Research Center, but also with hardware vendors. So lots of people go to someone and say, hey, you make a cool cellular module. Telit is here in town. We use them quite a bit. But those people come to Telit and say, we would like to use it in our product. Can you help us? And Telit says, sure, we'd be glad to sell you this component. It's 28 millimeters on a side, and you have to put it on a PC board. And most of those people say, what's a PC board? or what's an antenna? So Telit says, well, we can't help you, but here, let us refer you to Device Solutions. So we build a lot of relationships with these vendors to help them sell their products more quickly.
Interesting.
And that's kind of the focus. We also get referrals from some of the labs that do the testing. People submit a device and struggle with it, and the lab provides some help. But it gets very expensive to do trial and error at a lab at about $500 an hour. So they get referred to us, hopefully, and we can help them out.
Excellent.
The engineering services that Device Solutions provides is very unique and pretty specialized, and they're very good.
Thank you, Jerry.
Nice. Plug.
Here's the $20.
You have a platform, too, that you've developed.
We have a platform. So our business, we like to describe it as a three-legged business. The basic core of the business is embedded hardware and software development and test services related to that. The second part is we have some customized test services. We test all the handsets for AT&T and tablets to provide a benchmark. And we do some other custom testing services for people deploying a device or wanting to audit certain things, these kinds of things. Related to that is we do some carrier acceptance for some small companies. So they don't have any presence in the U.S. They send us a pile of phones. We coordinate with Jerry and others to do pre-testing. And when we're pretty confident they will pass, we send them into the carrier for their process.
Oh, interesting.
And that can be kind of a six-month process in parallel with the development of that device. And then the third part of our business is we're a product business. And we have, it's really more of a platform. It's a 900 megahertz enabled device that can collect data from a refrigerator or something like that. And we can take several of these and interface it to one gateway. That gateway has 900 megahertz radio, obviously, as well as cellular, and then relays the data to a server platform such as the one that Brightwolf offers. So we're the other end of that, and we've been looking for a number of years for somebody who had a platform that was flexible enough to be, you know, easily adapted to a lot of different customers and mobile aware. A lot of the platforms out there don't conserve the data very well. So if you're trying to get a device on a tractor trailer truck, you don't want to pay $30 a month for a data subscription.
Right.
That sort of sinks the whole business model.
Right.
But if you can get away with $5 a month, then the business model becomes very appealing. So to accomplish that, you need to send minimum data as infrequently as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of different from the way people are thinking, right? Whether it's social media or logging anything these days, more seems to be better.
Right.
Whereas we really need to focus on very short data, you know, no extra overhead, don't use HTTP, don't use XML, that just all blow up the data. Try to send, you know, 1K worth of data a day.
Yeah, efficiency, and efficiency.
Efficiency is very important. So a lot of the platforms are, you know, here's our Android client you can download on your device. It requires, you know, 10 times as much memory as you have. And we'll take more data than you want to pay for over there.
Gotcha. Well, this seems to be a very collaborative kind of environment. Obviously, we work hard at that at the Wireless Research Center, putting together a collaborative environment and that's really supportive. How do each of your businesses, both at Brightwolf and at Device Solutions, work with partners? And how does that make your business a better business?
Sure. So I'll take a first pass at that. We have a collection of partners that are hardware companies like Device Solutions that we partner with and help them offer to their customers that they find an end-to-end connected solution. So instead of just coming to our partners like Device Solutions with asking for a hardware board, they can come to them and get a whole solution.
Gotcha.
And so we then will stand behind our hardware ODM partners, which stands for Original Device Manufacturer, and work with them to provide these end-to-end solutions to the end customer, those brands that are trying to catch back up or get ahead in their industry.
Interesting.
Right. Like James said, the partners are really important to provide the whole solution. So we do embedded hardware and software, but we don't design the mechanics and the tooling and all those things,
right.
Which is a big, long, expensive part of the process. It can even, for a small device with not very much electronics, maybe it seems like the plastics and that development process can be very painful. So that's another example of a partner that we have. And one of the advantages of working with Device Solutions, Brightwolf, is we can each bring together the appropriate partner for that particular project. So we partner on the mechanical side with several different local companies, and some are better fits for each customer than others. So the having a variety of partners and having a network really allows us to fine-tune the team for each customer.
So somebody's sitting out there right now listening to this, and they're saying, you know, my business might be able to benefit from something like this, but I'm not quite sure how. I just haven't quite figured out where to put this Internet of Things in my world because, you know, historically, insurance wasn't thinking about Internet of Things. This had mm-hmm. nothing to do with them, right? But there's every kind of company that could be thinking about it. Where do they start? If they just want to think through, how can my business get better through utilization of this kind of information, where can they come?
Okay. I'll try to take a shot at that. I'm going to approach it from a little different angle, and kind of an angle we were talking about before, is that if you want to get on the internet, there's many, many ways to get on the internet, get on the highway, as Jerry said. Okay, there are, you know, side roads, maybe like a sensor for the body. Okay, that is a little bit of data, and it's quickly onto the internet.
Yeah,
it could be a Bluetooth device that, again, a little more range, but nothing, not long distance, and that's another way to get onto the internet. So a lot of people have to. I think when people think in terms of how do I take advantage of this, they should not worry so much about the technology, but the need. Okay, what is the problem they're trying to solve? And the technology, by definition, can be solved by these two gentlemen at this table, both from a radio point of view, whether it's, again, LTE radio or whether it's a sensor radio. All these things are well within the knowledge path, and they can bring that to the company, and they can say, this is your best option. So if you want to go to, if you want to get an internet thing, device, and integrate into your business, let us try to come up with the concept so we can materialize it into a product for you. So let the experts, as Bright Wolf and Device Solution, have been doing it for years. And that's the key here. A lot of people, we said it earlier, a lot of people try to go on their own. And when they go on their own, they typically run into hurdles they haven't seen before because they don't have the experience. So there's the depth of experience that is brought to the table here, along with the Wireless Center, of course. Is decades and decades of experience that is, which is important that if you want to get onto the internet and if you want to be connected through a wireless device, and it's more important than just because it really becomes a time factor. If this is a competitive advantage or this is a value proposition for the marketplace, you need to be doing it well and you need to be doing it timely. Yeah. And if you don't do either one of those activities correctly, it becomes very cost effective. And often these companies try and they fail, and hopefully they find Bright Wolf and Device Solutions. But I would advise heavily that instead of going the path of build it your own, roll your own, as we would say in my generation, I would make sure that I'd go to the experts and decide, you know, help us navigate this path. You know, I came out of the smart energy space, and we were well funded, and we thought we could do a lot of this invention ourselves, and we did. Mm-hmm. But it was very, very painful. The data side was painful. The device side was painful, and we had a lot of challenges. That if we had the partnership of the Wireless Center and the Device Solution of Bright Wolf, I guarantee you, we would have spent millions less, and we would have got to market much more effectively and much more efficiently. And more importantly, more timely. And timely is always the critical factor in a successful business. Yeah. So my advice to anybody who wants to get onto the Internet of Things or design something, go to the experts. Don't go through the path, you know, of trying to learn it yourself. There's just so much tribal knowledge in this space. And the beauty about what we have here at the table is that we understand the entire ecosystem within this space. You know, who can add value, who can help you move forward, and how the pieces all move together to actually make you be successful as a company. So without making it too much of a commercial about the Wireless Center, our job is to create economic development. Our job is to facilitate the companies that's trying to do this and bring their product to market. Mm-hmm. And we want to put these pieces together so you're successful.
Help
companies
grow.
And help companies grow. So that's our mission here. And this is, again, why did we ask the Bright Wolf to come in here? Because it completes a vision of what we want to do in terms of helping the economic development in this area. And this area is becoming very, very well known globally as the expertise area, a sector of expertise in the RF space.
Sure, absolutely.
Something interesting, observation.
We're going to rename it to Radio Forest.
That's right. Yeah, Radio Forest. Well, no, and again, the triangle as a whole and North Carolina as a whole.
Oh, dear. Well, we did have a chance to figure out how to get a hold of Bright Wolf. That's bright-wolf.com.
That's right.
How do you get a hold of Device Solutions, Chris?
Well, that would be device-solutions.com.
I'm seeing a trend.
Just a funny coincidence. But yeah.
It's like the Wireless Research Center Twitter handle, which is wireless or WRC_NC. And if we do want to get a hold of the Wireless Research Center, how do we do that?
That's a... info@wirelesscenter-nc.org.
Or wireless-center? No, wirelesscenter-nc.org. Okay, what a great show. I appreciate all of you guys coming in today and sharing your expertise with the world.
Thanks for giving us a chance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks, Ann.
And until next time for Wireless Connections, this is Ann Ravel-Petcher signing off.